Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to my session. My name is Jimmy Wong, and I'm the SSIS PM. And today I'm here to talk about what's new in SSIS as well as Master Data Service MDS. So I'm going to go through MDS first. I'm not the MDS PM, but then I know some of the MDS new feature. I will talk about that. Then in the rest of the session, I'm going to focus more on the SSIS. And we're going to do quite a few interesting demos on SSIS and to show you all the investment that we have made in the SQL 2016 releases. And hopefully, if I did it all right, then you guys will clap and you guys will have a happy face when you walk out the door. All right. So. For the SQL Server 2016 EIM tool, we're actually going to focus on a few things: performance, manageability, and connectivity. And how do we make the priority? We basically made it based on customer feedback, based on the CSS information, based on our interaction with customers, partner, ISV. And that's how we made the choices. Let's talk about the MDS first. Before I get into that MDS discussion, I want to kind of get a quick survey. How many people here are for SSIS? Okay. How many here for MDS? And how many here for both? All right. For MDS, we are focusing three main areas. The first one is performance, and second is the monitoring and management. And the third one is security. And I'm going to go through one by one. For performance, we actually did quite massive optimization at the MDS backend. And so in the new MDS 2016, we're going to have support for over up to 100 million rows or members. And then because of the optimization we did on the backend, when we did the benchmark on the Excel add-ins, we actually see the performance improvement of up to 15 times more faster. Now, on the web UI side, as well as the API side, we also did benchmark on that. And then we found that it also has at least 2 to 3 times more better performance around that. Now, from the monitoring and management side, we hear a lot of feedback, and we try to address some of it. The first one is the log retention. MDS did like transaction log, okay? But as the log grows bigger and bigger, problem comes. We don't have a good ways to manage that. But then now we actually add this automatic truncation feature. So now you can set your criteria and MDS will, you know, truncate the log for you based on your criteria and requirement. On the hierarchy front, we actually also improved the hierarchy management. We added a feature called dependency view. Okay, so we calculate the table dependency, just kind of like a lineage analysis, so that we figure out all the entity relationship. And then with that feature, now you can find and manage the unused members. Okay, and then manage those unused members from that angle. And the same hierarchy management feature will also be in the Excel add-on as well. Now, this work is actually in progress, so you're probably not going to see it in the CTP 3 release, but you probably will see by the time of RTM. On the business rule side, if you use the business rule, you see we have some built-in business rules logic on conditions, right? But often, you may not find it enough, okay? You may want to do your own logic. Now, we have that capability now. We actually now support your customized business rule by writing your own SQL query. And we also improve some of the built-in operator and logic, such as the not operator, as well as the else logic as well. From the subscription views, in the past, you can only set the subscription view or configure a subscription view based on your current data. But in the new MDS 2016, you can actually configure your subscription view based on the historical data as well. So you have more flexibility from configuring your views. Indexing. You can actually index attributes nouns. And you also can index multiple attribute, or we sometimes call it combined index. So why do we do this? Because you can actually attain a better performance based on your business need. Now, in terms of the entity, we added a feature called entity sync. Now, you can actually sync the entities between different models. Okay, and this is extremely useful when sometimes you have certain entity that you want to share across different models. Okay, so now you can actually have a way to do that. Many-to-many relationships. We support one-to-many relationship in the past, and we now, based on the feedback, we also support the many-to-many relationship. The UI flow is the same. We didn't really change much in terms of the UI flow, but now you have more option to configure the relationship other than just one-to-many or one-to-one. Now, from the security side, we did a few improvement. The first one we did is the admin approval workflow. Now, some user may have permission to read or write, and before they can just go ahead and make changes to certain entity, right? And you can't really stop them from doing that. Now, we have introduced this admin approval workflow so that you can, even when the user has the permission to make certain changes on the entity, the changes will not happen until the administrator approves it. So now you have a more ways to secure your, or even audit the changes within the MDS. We also did some improvement on the security permission side as well. In the past, we have these permission read or read and write. Okay, that's what we have in the past. Now we actually make it more granular. Now we support read, write, delete, and create. Okay, so we make it more granular in terms of the security aspect as well. Now, for those of you who have tried install MDS before, one thing you will find out is that whoever install MDS is the server admin, right? Or some people call it super user, okay? Now, the problem comes in when that person install the MDS in your company, find a better job, so retired, okay? Then what's next? You cannot really transfer this server admin permission to someone else in your company, and you basically got stuck with that. Now we actually introduce multiple administrative roles now. So you can actually add multiple server admin or AKA super user role to other people within your company. So it won't be just the person who installed the MDS has the permission, okay? And we also introduce the model admin concept. So this model admin concept is basically a role for someone to manage just within the model, okay? So you can have multiple models, and different models can have different admins. And then you can have like the super user that can manage everything within the MDS. Now, from the usability side, we also make quite a few changes on the portal side. We design some of the portal in terms of look and feel. What we mean cross-platform support is some of the portal, we actually change it to leverage the HTML5 technology. So now it will be able to run in more browser platform, other than just the IE. The work is still in progress. We don't anticipate that we change everything in this SQL 2016 release, but we anticipate probably about 15% changes, and then we'll continue to work on that, in the post-2016. Last but not least, Excel add-in. I mentioned earlier that we improved the backend of MDS and such that the Excel performance now runs faster. But on top of that, we also add a few other improvements on the Excel add-in side. The first thing is about the business rules. Now you can manage your business rules in Excel as well. You can also change the display name from the display from the domain-based attribute, and you can also configure such that the attribute value can be filtered based on another attribute. For example, you may have city and state attribute, okay? And how you can configure on the MDS server side such that when you try to pick the state from the XL, the city will kind of load correspondingly based on whatever state you select. Like for example, if I select Washington State in USA, then the city can display the Washington State related cities, for example. So this is kind of like the overview of the MDS SQL 2016 at a glance. I kind of summarize whatever I talk about here. And if you have any questions, please feel free to talk to me after the session. And if there's any question I can immediately answer, please also raise your hand as well. Yes? The version of the connection, that I don't think you can, but I can double check and then get back to you on that. Yeah. Okay, now getting into my topics. So SSIS, we actually invest heavily in the SSIS 2016. Indeed, we actually built a new team within Microsoft to just focus on the 2016 releases. And I'm the PM for that. And before I get into what area, I want to do another survey. How many of you or your company is planning to be on-premise 100% for your data integration story in the next 2 to 3 years? 100% on-premises? Okay, not a lot. What about hybrid? Like, meaning your company is moving to hybrid, part of it on-premise, part of it on the cloud, okay? That's like around 50%. What about 100% on the cloud for your data integration story? One, we're brave. Okay, yeah, so the reason why I ask is, you know, I want, what we're gonna invest into SSIS 2016, we have a lot of investment, not only just on the customer, based on investment on based on customer feedback. Let's keep moving by itself. But we also invest a lot of connectivity around the big data side, also on the cloud side, and then usability and productivity. I'm going to talk about one by one. For the manageability side, we have features that will enable us to do better deployment, better debugging, and better package management. For example, the deployment side, incremental project deployment is something that we added in this release. Whoever is using SSIS 2012 or 2016, if you use the project model, you may encounter one of the caveats is when you change a package within a project, no matter, you know, you only change one package or two, or you have to always redeploy the whole project. But now, with 2016, you have this incremental deployment model. You can hand pick which package you want to select and deploy. Okay, so you no longer need to deploy the whole project. Okay, and you can do it on the designer side as well as on the deployment wizard. Now, always on support. Always on support comes with SQL 2012 or SQL Server 2012. But since then, we don't have an official story of SSIS DB being supported on always on. There are some blogs talking about how you can manually set it up, but there are some caveats around that workaround too. And so now, with 2016, we officially support always on. And we did a few iterations with our customers and partners as well. And now we make the flow very similar to the always on configuration wizard. Okay, and it's pretty easy, very straightforward to set it up. In terms of debugging, how many of you here or know aware about the error column ID? Okay, now when you talk about the error column ID, you basically will get into frustration because, you know, you don't really know what that error column ID is about. You may have to do a lot of reverse engineering to figure out what this error ID refers to, what error column name is. And what we have, let me actually move to this slide. And what we have now introduced is error column name support. So from the data viewer, you can actually directly see the error column name. Okay, you don't have to write your own code to reverse engineering back. But on top of that, We extend this support to also the log. So you can actually see the error column name on the XML log as well. And we also have the API for you to programmatically retrieve the error column name based on the ID as well. So we hope that with this support, it will speed up and simplify your debugging troubleshooting. Customized level, our logging level. Now, a lot of feedback that we've received from customers is, hey, you know, the existing logging level, we have like three or four types, right? Verbals, pretty much everything. Some people find it too much and may hinder performance. The basic one, some people find, you know, kind of hinder, it's too basic, okay? It's too simple. It may not have what you need. And so now we introduce this customized logging level concept. We'll let you create and manage your own logging level. Okay, so based on your need, you can create as many different type of logging level as you want. And on top of that, if you ever need to grant your company employee with dbAdmin permission to view SSIS log, you no longer need to do that. Now we added this SSIS log reader role so that now you can grant that person the log reader role permission to see and manage the log. Okay, you no longer need to grant the DBA or dbAdmin role anymore. Package template, some people call it package part. Indeed, we're still trying to figure out the right name. But what it does is we are trying to provide a feature that allows you to reuse some of your control flow logic. Okay? Now, this is very often, like when we talk to our customer, one of the scenarios that we learn is a lot of customers, they may have hundreds of packages. And some of these packages may have like similar logic. Okay? Now, how they create it is they usually copy and paste, okay, which is okay because first time, one time. But the worst nightmare comes when they have to maintain it, especially when business requirement change, business logic change, you have to change the package logic. Now you have to reopen 100 times, 1,000 times, depending on number of packages that you have, to change each of the package of the same similar logic. Now with this package template or package part, now we allow you to basically extract the similar logic as a template, and you can save it as a template and be reused by other packages. So now you can even, you know, think about, hey, I can reorganize my IT department into maybe some people are kind of like a package developer, some people are kind of like a template developer, and the template developer can create, you know, a shareable logic, you know, for other package developer to consume. Okay, and you can kind of have a better management of code and duty as well. Automatic max buffer size. How many of you are aware of the default buffer size and default buffer max rows property in the data flow task? Okay, not many. Now, for those of you who are aware of it, do you try to change it or you should leave it? Depends, right? Okay, and probably the question comes in like, what should I change? It's a number. How do I know whether what's the right buffer size or for my max buffer size, et cetera? So because we hear the customer questions and concern, now we added a new property called auto adjust buffer size as highlighted in the screenshot. This is a new property. By default, it's set to false. Okay, so it won't impact any of your existing logic or configuration. So if you have a package that has certain configured numbers on the max buffer size on the old attribute, it won't touch it. Okay, so we have this backward compatibility. Now, if you do want to leverage to use it, you can just set this to true, and we'll let the backend SSIS engine to calculate the right buffer size for you. Okay, and this is basically where the equation that we use is as simple as it's shown. Basically, we take the, you still have to provide a default buffer max row number for us. And then we'll figure out at runtime what's your row size is, and we'll calculate the max buffer size. Now, we also expand the range of the maximum buffer size that can be used, right? Because we have this value probably 8-10 years ago, and at that time, memory is still not as cheap as now or as capable as now. So now we now support the maximum buffer size up to 2 GB minus 1. Right? I think before it was only 10 megabyte. So we really up-level the maximum buffer size range. And during our testing, we find that the performance actually significantly increased when you have like an OLEDB destination where you try to load a whole bunch of data to using your OLEDB destination, and especially when your SQL Server has the column store configured. So that's kind of on the manageability side. Now, because a lot of you express, or I think majority of you express that in the next 2 to 3 years, your company or yourself will kind of have a plan to move to the hybrid model, right? Cloud. And so we actually have invested quite a lot on connectivity, both on the on-premises side and on the cloud side. My slide has some problems, so I will have to keep it like that and then talk about it. So we actually, when we talk to the customer, we kind of see 4 different categories of the data integration trend. Okay, trend number one is pretty much 100% on-premises, right? Due to regulation, due to the government regulation or company policy, the company is not planning to go to the cloud anytime soon. Okay, so 100% on-premises is category number one. Now, category number two is a big data on-premises. Okay, they are using SSIS right now, happy with it, but because of the business need, they may have like a transaction log that they have to kind of process, especially financial company. Now they may set up an on-premises Hadoop system, okay, that does that job. Now the question comes, like, how can I connect this existing SSIS infrastructure with my big data investment? Okay, because big data is good at processing data, but what about sometimes you have to prepare data from your data warehouse and then kind of combine the data with the big data to compute, and then sometimes you want to move the result back to the data warehouse for reporting, for example, right? So that's the category two, is the on-premises big data customers using SSIS. The third category is the hybrid one, right? For example, customers using SSIS on-premises, but then they may have need to process data on the cloud. They may have a website, they may have a partner data on the web. Now, a lot of web raw data is big size. It doesn't make sense to move all the data from the cloud to on-premises and then compute it, right? It's not cost-effective there. Now, one way the customer is looking at is, hey, why can't I just process the raw web data on the cloud, right? Using HD Insight or some other technology, okay? And only get the aggregated or result data and move it back to on-premises as needed, always. And so in this case, that's kind of a typical hybrid story. And another hybrid story could be data archival, okay? Some people have SSIS on-premises running it fine, but then now they get in the problem where we need to keep 5 to 7 years of the transactional data. Now, on-premises getting more and more expensive and costly. Hey, there's a more scalable solution on the cloud for Azure storage. Can I leverage that? Can I move the data to the Azure storage as my, maybe secondary archival backup? Okay? So these are some of the scenarios that we learn. And then last but not least is the kind of 100% cloud, right? And some people will want to move basically what we call is a lift and shift scenario, where they have the on-premises, they want to do exactly the same thing on the cloud. Okay. Now, what we are addressing in the SSIS 2016 is basically the first three. On the cloud one, we are working on it. Okay, and we have some good roadmap and discussion with some of our MVPs and partners. I can share more info later, but for now, let me talk about some of the capability we added to support the number two and number three specifically. So Azure Storage Connector. So now we have this Azure Storage Connector that allows you to move data to the Azure Blob or from the Azure Blob. Okay, that's the first step. Okay, because now once you have this capability, you can do a lot more in the cloud. You can now trigger HD Insight tasks to basically process the data, or you can, you know, once the data is uploaded to Azure Blob, you can trigger another machine learning task in Azure to compute the data, okay? That's the cloud side, and we understand the on-premises may have the same need, right? For those of you, or for those of the customer who doesn't want to go to the cloud, we have this HDFS connector that allows you to move data to and from your on-premises Hadoop infrastructure. Okay, so now you can move the files from your Windows file system to HDFS. Then you can trigger an on-premise Hive job or Pig job to compute the data. And then once it's done, you can use the same HDFS task or HDFS connector to move the data back to your data warehouse. Now, from what I talk about, moving data is one part. Now, triggering the process is another part, right? So now we also have these HD Insight tasks and also the Hadoop on-premises task for you to trigger the Hive job or Pig job, okay? Now, with this, with all these tasks, you can do a pretty much end-to-end solution, okay? First, you use SSIS, you can, as a data prep, right? You can prepare the data. You can grab data from different sources, prepare it, transform it. You can even do cleansing or anonymize the data, if you will. And then put it in the file type, maybe CSV, RFO format. Then upload it to the Azure Blob or move it to HDFS, depending whether you're on-premise or cloud. Now then you use this Hadoop task, either HD Insight task or on-premise Hadoop task, to trigger the Hive job to process the data. You can also have Pig job to even do more on the Hadoop side. When it's done, you can use the same data flow connector task to basically move the data back to the data warehouse or for further processing. So now you have an end-to-end support, right, from your existing SSIS to the cloud or to on-premise and back to SSIS, back to your original data integration workflow. Now, from the first summary screen, I also mentioned other connectivity, such as OData. Now, OData support is not a new thing. We support OData V3 in the past. Now, for OData V4, we also have support now, okay, for 2016 SSIS. What we added a new feature is the ability to show you whether the feed is from V3 or V4. Now, if you configure OData connection manager, some you added the URL or the link to the feed, right? But sometimes you really don't know what that feed version is, okay? We added this little thing to make your life kind of better and easier by telling you, oh, this feed is actually from V3, this feed is from V4, so you don't have to guess. Sometimes you may forget, especially if you have to manage a lot of the feed. And especially when you do a migration project, right, where you migrate a lot of old data feed from V3 to V4, this may help you to say, hey, this one haven't been migrated yet. Okay. Now, in terms of usability and productivity, we are doing a few things. Well, number one is the multi-version support in SSDT. Now, for those of you who have used SSIS for years, you probably noticed that, hey, we actually require you to install a specific version of SSDT BI and Visual Studio for a specific version of SSIS package, right? And if you manage like packages 2012, 2014, or even 2016, in the future, you may have to install 3 versions, right? That's a nightmare for IT side, right? Especially you have to buy the license, maintain it, right? But now we make it simple. We now build a version called One Designer or multi-version support, where you can use the latest SSDT to manage, author, debug, and deploy your different SSIS packages just from One Designer. This is still work in progress. So you won't find it in the latest CTP3 or the SSDT download, but this is something we are working towards for release by the time of RTM. Okay? And there are other things that I haven't mentioned. For example, the designer improvement. we make quite a lot of improvement based on feedback on the SSIS designer. Okay, and then we also take one of the feedback is, hey, you know, why Microsoft did all these like SSDT, SSDTBI, different versions. Now, no more SSDTBI. Install SSDT, you get everything. Okay, you get AS, RS, and IS. Last but not least, we also did some improvement on the catalog view. For those of you who need to go to SSMS and then look at some of the catalog view, now you should see some performance improvement in terms of loading the, yes? There's no such thing.
That's gone.
Yeah, that's gone. Okay. You just download SSDT, you get everything. Yeah. And then also, I haven't mentioned is Excel support. We're going to support Excel 2013 and 2016 officially, right? Like if you look at SSIS 2014, we only support officially up to Excel 2007. Okay, now in SSIS 2016, we're going to support the up to the latest Excel version for the Excel source. And destination. And then Teradata and Oracle, we're going to continue to have support. This will be support by Attunity, and it will be the same as the out-of-the-box download that should be available when we RTM. Now, if I have time, I will also show you the execute SQL task integration with R as well. We didn't actually do much. We just leveraged the existing execute SQL task and then leveraged the SQL Server and our integration feature. And then we actually run through a test end-to-end to make sure that it works. Now, SSIS, we find that SSIS can be the orchestrator for triggering an R job or what we call operationalizing the R script in the SQL Server. Yes? No, we did not invest on this area in this release. We did hear some of the feedback around it. Potentially, we look at it post 2016. But we don't have any, I would say, there's a particular improvement on this area. So that's kind of the overview. Any other question before we go into demos? Yes. No, that's not the intention. Okay, BIMO, Vergence is our strategic partner, and BIMO is actually a good tool, right, in my opinion. And they did a lot more things. Okay, so I think BIMO will continue to serve its own purpose and support. What we're trying to create on the package template or package part is just to provide some basic add-on value for you if you have, like, you know, need for managing packages in a reuse fashion of some simple reuse, you know, situation. Yes, you can use the package template. But for like BIMO is way more than just co-sharing, right? They do like, you know, a lot of like co-management, co-reuse, deployment, and all that. So we are not trying to replace BIMO. Indeed, we want to make sure it depends on your need. If you have more advanced need, yes, go for BIMO. Okay, if you have, you know, just basically, hey, I have this pain point about keep updating thousands of packages. Hey, maybe there's now some new way for me to do that.
Yeah. So it's not
going to
be metadata or anything like that?
No, not for now. Yes?
Has there been any improvements in the data lineage tracking?
Yes. That was part of the plan. And currently, it's not within the scope for the RTM of the 2016 release, but we are still working on it and potentially could be add-ons or download later on. We are still working out the better solution for that. And so, yeah, for the 2016 RTM release, you won't get that lineage support. But it's something that we are working on, maybe as an added value later on. Yes? Yes.
What about the rest of clustering?
The rest of clustering, what do you mean?
What is it going to be? As in supporting SSIS on clusters? Well, we do have a white paper that talks about some potential ways to do the clustering or the SSIS farm. And we had one customer in US that used the white paper combined with the always-on support and built the SSIS farm with high availability support. Okay, but we don't have any other additional feature to support clustering or scale out at this point. Right? Yes, okay. So let's actually do some demos. Okay, so I probably should have time to do two demos. Let's see. So this the first demo that I want to show you is going to have, I combined probably four or five different features in this single demo. Okay, and the demo is about, let's say, assuming we are in an insurance company, okay, and the insurance company, we have customer calling the call center to report or to file claims. Hey, my car got hit and I need to claim $300, for example, right? So usually call center may have their own log system or kind of like a call log system. And let's say the system generate log data in a file like this. Okay, control one. Can you guys see it? Let me, yeah. With date times, you know, with policy ID, amount, whether it's temporary approved or not, okay? Now, but as often we want to figure out, hey, is there any fraudulent claim? Or what are the high-risk policy holder that has a higher risk of fraudulent claims? So what we are trying to do here is we try to get the call center transaction load data. We kind of call it as a raw data. And we kind of combine it with some customer policy data. Like we also, it's very often that we have customer policy data in a relational DB, like a SQL Server, for example. And let's say the data could be like this, right? You know, some policy ID, the customer name, expiration date, what type of policy they have. And what I want to do is I want to use Hadoop, right, to process these transactional data and then combine it with my data or the customer information from the relational DB and see if any of these policyholder has called into the call center to file claims within the last 4 days at a high frequency, right? That's what this demo is about. And from this demo, you will be able to see that. One interesting thing is I added the Hive template here, okay? This is leveraging the package template features. Now, why I added a Hive template to call a Hadoop file task system, copy the Hive script, and then trigger the Hive job? I can actually do that by just directly calling the Hive task, right? But let's say, what if my company have like 100 of packages, and maybe 50 of them will leverage the Hive or the Hadoop system on premises to do the computing, right? Maybe I'm moving more and more to the big data, so I'm moving some of the transformation to Hadoop. Okay, now I can actually create this template, and this template can take parameters. If I double click on the template, you can see that each of the template allows you to customize your parameter that you pass into the template, or attributes that you pass into play. So effectively, I can create a Hadoop template where I can tell the Hadoop template task to say, hey, download the Hive script from location A and then process it. Now, imagine you have multiple packages. Package A, you can pass in the location of Hive script A. You can have package B, pass in the location of Hive script B, and package C, pass in the location of Hive script C to this template. And then the template is generic, right? So it would say, oh, Now for this package, I go here to run this Hive script. For this package, I go here to run this packet, to run the Hive script. So that's kind of one of the demonstration of how you can use the template to implement your similar logic for different packages. And it'll also demonstrate how we can use the Hadoop task to trigger Hadoop job. Now, let me kick off the this package run, and it's gonna take some time. And while we are waiting for it to run, I also want to kind of point out is that here in this task is called basically copy logs to HDFS. So what it does is, you know, remember the transaction log that I show you the files, right? It will copy that and then move it to the HDFS file system. Now within this data flow, I did a I will show you the data flow in a second. But within this data flow, what I did, the logic is some of the raw data that comes in, they may not be perfect, right? That's what happens in the real world, right? You may have data that missing certain data, you know, and you need to basically detect those and then maybe filter those out in a different log, and then so that you can have a follow-up, right? Because different data system may generate some bad data. Now, what we did is, for all those bad data, I basically output it to a data viewer here. Now, as you can see, this is the error column ID that I refer to. Okay, that's what exists in the past. What's new that we introduce is the error column name description. Okay, so with that, where you can now see the exact error column that correspond to the ID. So the error column ID 22 represent the approved column, and 13 represent the claim ID column. Okay, so that's kind of something we added. This column does not exist in the past, and now you have that without doing any manual work to figure that out. Okay, so let's close that. While we're waiting for it to run, let's look at the SSMS, the Management Studio, and see some of the features. Now, one of the features that I mentioned was the customized logging. So if you go to the Integration Service Catalog under the SSIS DB, you can see a new option called Customized Logging Level. Over here, you will have a new UI that pops up, and where you can actually create, edit, or manage your own customized logging level. I can give a new name called J Wong Test, say 33. Now, one thing we took the feedback when we developed this feature, we actually constantly talking to our customer partners and try to get more feedback and then do better, right? So one thing we got a feedback is, hey, you know, can you create a new customized logging level based on some other level so that I don't have to every time create it from scratch? Okay, now we did it. We added a new checkbox to allow you to create from an, you can create from scratch or you can create it from an existing customized logging level. You can create a customized logging level based on another customized logging level. Okay, so that's the flexibility that you have. And let's say I click OK. And here you can actually go to the statistic and event to click what are the event and statistic you want to monitor or you want to log at. You can change, you know, the basic one and add more. That's up to your preference. Now let's go back. And now also let's look at the security role folder under the SSIS DB. You will see that we added this SSIS log reader role over here. And this allow you to basically grant user access to the log without granting them the DB admin permission. Now, as you can see, the the package is still running. So I'm gonna, you know, show you the more about the template side. If you look at the template, now you actually see we have a new subfolder called Control Flow Template. And under that, if you right-click to it, you can choose to create your own template, or you can choose to add an existing template. Now this gets interesting. Now, what do you mean by adding existing template? You can either add a template and copy over to your project as the template within this project, or you can add the template as a reference so that the template is actually existing in another project, but you can still use it. Okay, so you have a choice to make your own. If you want to add reference, just check this checkbox, or if you want to just copy over the template, then don't check that checkbox, basically. And that's the high-level overview of the first demo, which I show you the error column name support, I show you the customized logging, I show you the log reader role, I show you the Hadoop HDFS task and Hadoop task. I show you the template, how you can leverage the template, customize the shareable logic, how you can pass in the parameters, and then how you can add a template. So that's kind of the first demo. Any questions? Yes. No. You can configure the logging level for different environment. This is not available in CDP3, but it will be in the LTM version. But when you create the logging level from, like, say, another log level, once you create that, it has no parent-child relationship. It basically, our logic is just copy whatever from the other logging level and then use it on the, but they are kind of separate. They don't have any relationship or information. Yeah. You cannot in CTP3, but that's something we're going to support in LTM, hopefully. Yes? Oh, no. So how the template work? The template concept is a design time concept, okay? So it only exists in the designer, okay? And now when you build and compile your package, your template logic will become just like a regular DTS6. Okay, so after you build a package with a template reference, when you open the DTS6, what you see is exactly the same XML context, just like a regular DTS6. So there's no information about the template. So because during the build, it will grab the template logic, put it into the DTS6 or the regular package, and then as part of the flow. Okay, so you that's why you only get the template logic during the design time, but not the runtime.
If you change the template, will it flow back into all those, or will it override the kind of
the... Yeah, so if you change the template, then you will have to rebuild your package to get the update. Right. Now, unless you open the package and then you, like, say you have multiple machine, and you already open a package with reference to a template, and then on the other machine you're changing a template and save, Visual Studio has the ability to notify you that, hey, your code's changed. But if you say you don't do that, you just change the template, close down the IDE, and then open the package, you won't get notification at this point. You have to rebuild to get the new template changes.
So do the template parameters become the package parameters?
The template parameters, yes, it's part of the package parameters. Yeah. Okay, so now that's all run, and I can show you the result on the SQL relations. Basically, I process it with the Hadoop, and then now the result copied back to a SQL database. Right, nothing special. So I decided to use the time to show you the out integration, if I may. So this is another package that we created specifically for demoing this OWL and SQL Server integration. Basically, this package has, if we look at the data prep step, is a data flow task, and I basically try to move some data from a file to an OLEDB destination, and then move another data from another file to an OLEDB destination. Now let's look at what these files are like. So basically, I have created two Excel file, and the Excel file contains some customer data. What we are trying to simulate is, hey, we are a credit card company, and I have some real data about some credit card fraud information. Right? We call it training data. Right? It's a data scientist provided to me. Okay? It contains, as you see, some of the state information, the gender, some customer ID, and some of the balances, and some of the fraud risk value. The last column, the fraud risk value, is basically is a value to indicate, hey, you know, if one, then these particular customers with these attribute, like with this type of balance, with this like of gender, may have a higher risk of fraudulent on the credit card. Okay, this is the data that data scientists provide us, and we usually call it training data. Now I have another data, very similar, but this is what we refer to the real customer data. Now I put it on the Excel, but obviously you can imagine this data usually exists in a SQL database, just like maybe customer table or something like that. Okay, and notice that this data doesn't have the risk column. Okay, and with machine learning, the idea here is you want to bring a set of training data, you want to build your model, and use the training model to train the model. And then once you have built the model, you apply your actual data with the model and let the model to predict which of the customer in the real customer data has a high fraudulent risk or not. Right? That's kind of the high level of machine learning logic. And so with SSIS, yes, we can actually do that. Now how? Let's see. First of all, because the data is in the Excel, so I'm going to move that to OLEDB destination. And the reason I put it on Excel because I want to demonstrate that we support Excel 2013 or 2016. Okay, these files are from 2013 or 16. So I can use it to move it to the relational destination. When it's done, then basically I'm not doing anything fancy. This is an execute SQL task. Okay, nothing fancy. It exists forever, right? And from the SQL statement, what I'm calling here is actually I'm calling a store procedure here. And the store procedure is called fraud detect, right? So what is it? Let's look at it. So now let me go to the database. And this is the store procedure. Look what the store procedure looks like. Okay, the top is just like the regular syntax of setting up the store proc. The OWL script begins from this line, right? You call an execute sp execute external script. This is kind of like a standard. You specify this OWL language, and all the red tests here, they are all OWL script here. Okay, now I'm going to explain, you know, line by line what it does here. So you have this OWL script, and potentially the data scientist or the machine learning expert needs to provide to you if you are not a machine learning expert. And the first line here is telling the SQL server which server I want to execute this OWL script is. Now SQL server and OWL integration in SQL Server 2016 allows you to execute this OWL script within a SQL server. And you can specify which SQL server you want to execute. So you don't have to execute on this machine. You can tell that, hey, I want to execute on that SQL server. And you can do that. Now, the second part is basically about creating a column. Remember, you know, the original data that I show you, right? Where you have gender as one or two, you probably can guess it's like, oh, maybe male or female, states is like 35, 15, what is that? The probably some number represent the 51 states in the United States. So how can, and basically, this is not too readable. So our script has the ability for you to basically specify your mapping between your value into a string or into some other representation. Okay, so basically I specify that, hey, from this is the 51 state of United States that maps to the column of the state column, and then I also can map the gender, you know, to tell, okay, one represent male and then two represent female, and I also can map other columns with other value as well. So once you kind of pre-set the mapping configuration, then the next thing you want to do is want to tell the R script where to get the data. So what kind of data do we have? We have the training data, which we call it fraud DS. We have the actual customer data, which we call it the score DS. And we have the output data. This is a data set that is going to store the output of the machine learning output, okay, or the R script output. Okay, so we create this three data set. Now, we have everything. So the next step we have to do is we want to basically train this machine learning model. And in this example, we use the linear model, right? Rx lean mol is basically a built-in R function, right, for calling the linear model. And we basically tell this model that, hey, you know, I want to calculate the fraud risk based on the state, the gender value, the cardholder name or cardholder attribute, and then the balance number of transactions, credit line, etc., to basically to build this model using the to get the fraud risk value. And I'm basically telling this model that, hey, use this training data that I provide. I remember the training data that this fraud DS is actually correspond to this table, right? And the R script say, okay, got it. And this is a common R1, but what I want to show you is when you actually create this model, the model will be kind of stored as the logic object. You can actually save this logic object as a RDA file. On the machine, and that means you are saving the trained model. So you don't have to rebuild your model every time. Now when you save it, you can reuse this model next time. And this is how you call the save model. So if you save it, then next time you don't have to do all this above. You just load the model by running this line, and then you can call the next steps. The next step, which is the last step, is to basically call the prediction, right? Rx predict is another R function. That it will run a prediction using a model that you provide and using the actual data that you provide, and it will output the prediction value or the prediction data set to the output data set that you provide. So you have the model, which is the logic op. You have the data, which is the this real customer data. Which is this one, okay? And you tell them that, hey, output the result to the outdata object, okay? And once you have the result output, you can basically save this output back into the relational DB, which you specify here, okay? So now after you run this script, didn't run it, but then I think I pre-run it already. So yeah, this is go output. So you will actually see the output data as a fraudulent logic score. Now this seems like a whole bunch of numbers. Okay, how do I interpret this? Basically, the negative risk score means like there's completely no risk, right, in this model. And if it's a positive number, that means the risk will become higher and higher when the number get bigger, okay? And so that's kind of the output of of the prediction. Now, as you can see, we didn't change anything in SSIS. What we leverage is just leverage this execute SQL task and leverage the new feature of OAuth and SQL Server integration. Now you get, you can use SSIS as kind of a way to operationalize your OAuth or machine learning model using the new features. So that's all I have for today. Any other questions? Yes?
So given that, is there any changes to the data mining component? I know it's more analysis services side than integration services side, but it sort of falls in the scope of data mining.
Data mining.
So, yeah, so 2016, is there any change to the data mining
component? No, we didn't. Yes? No, we decided to take it out in the last minute, mainly because we had some working code and we validated with some existing customer already, but then we want to have a better end-to-end story with RS, AS, and the PQ overall. So we think that the copy and paste the mQuery into SSIS as a source may not be the ideal experience, right? So we are still trying to figure out a better solution end-to-end. So this is probably some work that we'll focus on after the 2016 release. Yes?
On that.
Yes.
So would that go in the direction of picking up the mQuery, how queries can be?
Yeah, our idea is still, we know that a lot of business, they are actually using both the Power Query a lot, and especially when you have to kind of operationalize some of this query into a reporting, right? You know, instead of just building all this logic with SSIS, just take the PQ mQuery, right? Copy and paste it, then you get what you need, right? In the ETL side, that's our idea. But then now when we get into a lot of the details, like what about connection string, connection management? How do we do connection management the same way? Because PQ connection management is kind of slightly different than SSIS. So that's one thing that we need to get some synchronization around that. And then also, there's other things when you talk about, what about after I move the mQuery, I need to edit it, right? What's the editing experience? Like PQ has a very enriched UI to allow you to edit it. Like if you don't have the similar experience, would that hinder the productivity? Right, so those are the things that we are reconsidering, and because of that, we kind of want to say, hey, take out what we have and try to build something better once for all. Yes?
Just going to the master data services. So as far as the backend side of it and the API, what's changed there? So does the database need to stay on-premises, or is that cloud, is that hybrid? So previously, there was a staging and the publishing side of it.
I think the changes is only on UI. There's some changes, okay, definitely. The changes on is more on the query side, like how you kind of retrieve data, like some of the query of getting the data. Those change to maybe have we rewrite it to have a better optimization. But we don't, as far as I know, we don't change the overall infrastructure architecture.
So the API as well is
it's still the same. Yeah, it just return you the result faster. Thanks. Any other things? Yes?
Yeah, with SSIS and WU data connectors like that, there will be more connectors for Office 365 lists. Do you need to go to any third party add-ons?
You mean the SharePoint list?
Sorry?
You mean the SharePoint list?
Specifically one that's now stored in 365?
Oh, no, we don't have anything specific target for that. The latest support that we have is probably on CoPlex. We have this SharePoint list adapter. Our developer took the 2012 version and upgraded to support 2014, but it's still on CoPlex, so we don't have an official supporting story. That's something that we may consider supporting it later, but definitely not in the 2016 scope. Why it's about priority. Like we at the end of the day, we have 11 developers. And so we, as you see, we actually, in this release, we did a lot, right? Not just addressing customer feedback, or not just doing new feature, but forget about customers, right? We did basically addressing some customer feedback, like, you know, auto buffer size, column name, support, to even bigger feature like always on, or incremental deployment to connectivity on big data, Hadoop, right? We want to make sure that, hey, you know, the business is changing. The technology is changing. A lot of people start moving to the hybrid. Like, look at this cloud. Like, we have like 50% of people raise their hand that you guys want to move to the cloud in the next 2 to 3 years as a hybrid model, okay? Now, we want to be able to provide you that support so that when you need it, you have that, okay? And the cloud and big data support is not the end. This is the first step, right? We're going to, based on the feedback from our customer partner ISV, we're going to enhance more of it. We may work on more supporting data file type, okay? Right now we support Avro or CSV. Maybe we want to support other common data type. Depends on the feedback. So this is something that we continue to work on even post 2016. Yes? Yes, yeah, we actually, so there are a few like balanced data or complex feed feature. Or the data streaming feed feature, that many of those are out of the box, download before. We're trying to put it in the box in 2015, so you don't have to go and download it and things like that. And it also simplify our supporting model as well. Now the cloud thing is that's something that we are most likely gonna do it as a separate download. We call it Azure Feature Pack, okay? I'm not sure how many of you know, but we actually released the Azure Feature Pack support for SSIS 2012 and 2014 on MSDN download, even a few months back. Okay, so if you're using 2012 and 2014, you'll get the Azure connector, the HD Insight task, as what you see I show you on the screen or on the presentation. So you can actually go download it. And the reason why we want to keep the download approach is because Azure stuff is cloud service keep changing, so we want to have the flexible shipping mechanism, right? To when we keep updating the feature pack, we can ship another version so that you can get the latest capability and functionalities. Yes?
Why isn't that in DataTools?
Yeah, so that's what I was referring to, right? Because for the cloud stuff, because we anticipate it keep changing,
yeah.
And so we want to have a more frequent update model. Okay, if it's in a data tool, then potentially we may not be able to update as fast as we want to be. So it's a matter of choice. Now, in the future, we may consider some of the thing when it's stable, we can move it to the box, right? Just like the BDD, for example, or the stream data destination. Some of those feature or out of the band download in this release will actually include as an inbox. Yeah, yes, yes. Yeah, so we try to put most of the inbox stuff or on-premises stuff as part of the inbox or part of the SSDT. And then the cloud thing, we at this point, we are still, you know, kind of leaning towards to ship it as a download so that you get more frequent update. But potentially, one day, we may take the switch and move it to the inbox. Yes. No problem.
The SSI SDB box and retention window and truncating, we got to a point where we get about 300 days by trunking and it causes a lot of locking. Is there any resolution around that issue?
You mean SSIS or MDS?
SSIS DB.
Oh, SSIS database, okay.
You know when you set the retention, does it clean all that cleaned up at midnight?
The retention feature is on MDS that I. Yeah.
When you want to clear the logs, mm-hmm. There's two procedures that you can use to clear the logs.
Yeah, so
it's based on a retention day setting. So by default, I think it goes to 365.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a lot of activity, a lot of logs, if you try to clear that retrospectively, it can cause lots of locking.
Yeah. We don't have any solution for that at this point.
Yep.
So, but that's the feedback, I will take it back.
Yeah.
We addressed it on the MDS side, but we didn't do it much on the SSI side. Yeah. Okay. With that said, thank you so much for your coming, and thank you for your time. If you have any question, you can email me at jwong@microsoft.com, JWONG. Okay? Thank you.